Welcome back to the Progressive Gentleman Podcast. My name is Dan.
I'm Matt.
And as always, thanks for taking the time to listen to us nerd out about music. This episode probably is going to be one of our shorter ones because it's just a concert review episode. We've recently caught Darkest Hour on their 25th anniversary tour. Is that 20 or 15th?
I think it was 15.
I was going to say, if it's 25th, holy shit.
Yeah, there's no way.
It's not 25th. Yeah. Yeah, geez. 15th anniversary tour. I'm not that old. I was extremely excited for the show. That is one of my favorite records of all time. I'm pretty sure I've said that on multiple episodes.
Yeah, I think we actually talked about how we willed it into existence because we had talked about it, and then like a week later they announced that they were doing a tour. So
yeah, I had been spam posting on like anything they would post about tours and such the last maybe, I don't know, 5-6 years, just saying, you know, tour deliver us in its entirety, tour deliver us in its entirety.
Do it.
Because that record's just, I don't know, it's just so, I just hold it in such high regard that I just really wanted to see it live. And one of my first concerts ever was actually Darkest Hour. With Unearth, and we had talked to the band about this, actually, yeah. Trying to figure out who it was. It was August Burns Red, right? August Burns Red, Unearth.
August Burns Red, Unearth, I think Suicide Silence, and yeah. Darkest Hour.
Yeah, so like an insane lineup. That's my first ever metal show, and that was, you know, back then I was very much into like, you know, the metalcore, deathcore type scene, so that lineup really kind of checked the boxes for me. So it was kind of cool. That was right around the time when they released Deliver Us. So they were kind of touring in support of that record. So I did get to see some of those songs played live. But with how important that record was to me, it's kind of cool that it's come full circle and I was able to see them tour that in its entirety, 15th anniversary tour. So
yeah, I mean, yeah,
a lot of hype just going into it. So this was actually at a venue we had never been to before. I don't know if it's newer or if it's just now all of a sudden they're getting tours because Pittsburgh's kind of weird with like venues right now.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing too. I haven't looked to see when it was founded, but I know like it seemed like kind of once things were opening back up from COVID that I started noticing a lot of like metal shows hitting the Craft House.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the name of the venue. So it's called the Craft House. Yeah,
I guess I jumped the gun there.
No, you're good. Craft House Stage and Grill, I believe, is the fully qualified name there.
Yeah, it also has a bowling alley too.
It does. There's a door that takes you to a bowling alley. It's very interesting. It's kind of like Hard Rock Cafe on crack. it's a bit, you know, it's a bit bigger than at least the Hard Rock Cafes that I've ever seen shows at. We recently went to that Delta Sleep show at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yeah.
You feel really cramped in that venue versus this one, the Craft House. I feel like there's more room for activities.
Cue the Step Brothers clip.
You know, a lot of the hardcore metal fans, they like to have a lot of room for activities, whether that be, you know, the slam dancing, if that's what you're into, or just moshing in general. And I did like that about this venue, is even though, you know, it's a stage and grill similar to like a Hard Rock Cafe where, you know, people are eating apps and drinking beers
yeah.
and sit, there's actual tables. It's essentially a restaurant. There's that, you know, it's a larger stage area and a larger pit area. So where there's that separation from, you know, the people who want to be up front moshing and such versus the people who just want to sit at a table, eat mozzarella sticks and drinking beer, which honestly, I have sort of sometimes that's what I want to do. I don't know. I'm older now. So
yeah, it's
sometimes I just want to sit down at a table, eat mozzarella sticks and have someone scream at me from a stage. That just sounds like an okay evening.
Yeah, it's, I'm kind of like torn on how like I want venues to be. It's like on one hand, when you see like a bunch of people sitting and eating and not like getting into the music, I feel like it kind of tones down the the vibe of the show, and I feel like you don't get as much stage presence from the band because they're like, well, nobody here really cares. They're all just like eating food, and they're not like moshing and jumping around and like headbanging and stuff.
Or even just standing like in front of the stage. You know what I mean? Like we went to a show, Intervals and Thank You Scientist and Cryptodira and Seder. And that was at a venue that we had not been for a concert before, called Jurgles. And it was a similar situation. That venue is large. The stage area is a good size, like the pit area, for lack of a better, you know, the standing area, is actually probably similar in size, if not maybe a little bigger than Craft House. I know it's deeper
than
Craft House, but at that show, especially for the first three bands, or maybe just all the way up to Thank You Scientist, so maybe just the first two bands, there were maybe five or six people in the standing area, and everybody else was just kind of, you know, sitting at the bar, drinking beer, or sitting at tables and, you know, eating mozzarella sticks like we keep joking about. But seriously, so, and you could tell that the band members noticed. I mean, they commented on it multiple times. Hope everyone's enjoying their dinner, you know, stuff like that. Because it's essentially like it was as if they were kind of secondary to the mozzarella sticks and the beer. So, I feel like this venue kind of was a little bit better.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
In that regard, I think there was, you know, less people, and maybe it was just the show. Maybe more people were more interested in the show than they were their food. But you know, without a larger sample size between either of those venues, it's hard to kind of draw that conclusion. But that's just kind of what it felt like at those shows. So it was nice to see, you know, that separation between restaurant area and stage. And it was also nice to see a lot of people, if not everybody in that place, most of the people in the place kind of come up front for probably everyone except for maybe the local band, which still had enough people up there, more than the openers when we went to the interval show at Jurgles, in my opinion.
Yeah. I definitely think it seemed like most people came in like kind of around doors, and they like situated somewhere and got drinks and like ordered food and
hit the merch table, stuff like that ahead of time, kind of posted up having like a home base, which that part is nice.
Yeah. And so like they did that at the beginning, and it seemed like kind of partway through the opener, people started to come up to the like pit area. And then like by the time, you know, the next band came on, it seemed like a good bit of people were like finished up with eating and everything. So it was like, you know, as the show went on, more and more people like filled the pit area. So I think it did work better. And I don't know if that's just like the people that were there that were more like gung-ho and less wanting to eat food than like when we went to Jurgles, but it did give, I think, a better atmosphere, and it felt a little more like alive than.
Yeah, for sure. I agree completely. So first impressions of Craft House, pretty decent. I kind of wish that I didn't have to drive as far.
Yeah.
But that's a personal problem that has nothing to do with anything else. So definitely a venue that I would visit again for a show. And it worked out pretty well for that being kind of where we got to experience this tour. So the opening band was a local band, Arcane Haven. I know they were doing local bands at pretty much every stop. And I also know that we're talking about this tour, reviewing this tour after it's over. I know that it's ended. I know it's going to the UK, though. I'm pretty sure they're playing Deliver Us in its entirety over there as well.
So oh, cool.
Listening from the UK, you know, maybe there's a little bit more value to this. But, you know, if you missed out and you just kind of wanted to see how this was, there would have been a different local band for you. But our local band, Arcane Haven. So this is a band that I'm actually familiar with, though I hadn't listened to them in a good while. The singer actually went to, like, I grew up in the same area as him, so I knew him not very well. We weren't like friends or anything, but like I knew of him. So whenever he started this band, I had obviously was already into like metal music, so I checked them out. They did like a cover of Paramore. I think they did Crush, 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 that I always thought was kind of cool. And then they were actually on the bill for, there was a big metal festival, metal hardcore festival that went around back in 2010 called Thrash and Burn. Oh, okay. And it was at a very weird venue back then too. It was an old roller rink.
You just have like a roller derby beat down to,
they should have rented skates for that. That would have been funny. Minus the beat down part. No, you know, we don't support violence on this podcast. All right. But roller skating to metal music sounds entertaining. I'd support that. So,
I mean, I figure it just inevitably, you know, you're going to have a rollerblade mosh pit if you strap rollerblades.
I want to see choreographed rollerblade slam dancing. That's what I want to see.
Wow.
But yeah, so Arcane Haven. So to kind of put it in perspective, in my opinion, in their current state, they sound very much like August Burns Red to a degree. I think like that sort of flavor of metalcore they fit well with.
Yeah, I definitely, it was like we had both looked at each other while they were playing, like, I'm getting some August Burns Red here. It's like we kind of simultaneously came to that conclusion. There's definitely seems to be a lot of inspiration, whether or not it's intentional, but they definitely have some riffs in there. It was like, I feel like this is inspired by August Burns Red.
Yeah, 100%. And honestly, and you know, I'm not just saying this because they're from Pittsburgh, I honestly forgot they existed, which that's not a knock on them. That's just, I honestly think it's due to just sort of limited exposure. You know, they're not really out there. And I think that that's kind of like, they deserve more exposure is basically where I'm trying to go with this.
Yeah.
I honestly think that they sounded better than the next two bands. Genuinely, I felt that way. I could have seen them as being direct support on a show like this. That's I genuinely felt like their music is that good, and I felt like they put on a pretty solid performance. If I had to rank the bands in this, they would be second after Darkest Hour from the show for me personally. And that could just be because of my, you know, my favoritism towards metalcore versus, you know, some of the like sludgier, doomier stuff that Bloodlet and Zayao, which are the next two bands, kind of like, that's kind of where the lane that they're in. So maybe it's just because of my style preference, but I really enjoyed their set. I thought they put on a great show. I was impressed. I think they've been around for a while, and they have a decent following on social media and stuff. I think they have maybe like, I don't know, 16,000 or something like that followers.
Oh, wow.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's only six. I don't know. I have not looked in a while.
I mean, even six is still.
I was going to say, I looked that day and was, I remember being like, oh, wow, that's actually more than I was expecting. But, you know, some of the bands that we've talked about on like Hidden Gems and stuff like that only had what, like 500-600 followers between that and then maybe like topping out at around like 6,000, and they have 11.6. I just looked it up. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. So
that, I mean, that's a good following. It's surprising to me, and maybe it's just because they've been off my radar. It's surprising to me that they are not more well known. So I would honestly say if you get anything out of this episode, go check out Arcane Haven, especially if you like, I mean, if you like Darkest Hour, if you like Deliver Us, you know, that era of metalcore, like what was that? Messengers or Constellations? One of those two for August Burns Red. Like it fits with that.
Yeah, I definitely think it was like kind of that. I would say like not quite modern August Burns Red. It was like kind of that era, like
yeah,
it was Constellations, Messengers.
For sure. For sure. And it's not, you know, I know we're a progressive gentleman podcast, Prog Gent. The closest of those two you might get out of that is Gent. Maybe there's a little bit of that, but
Yeah, you know, I would say there's some genty bits in there.
Yeah, it's not overly proggy. There's a little bit of prog flavor every once in a while, but it is definitely that like August Burns Red, Constellations, Messengers era. That flavor is definitely there. So if that's something that you were into, check out Arcane Haven. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I had never heard them before, so I was pleasantly surprised by, I mean, not that I expected them to be bad or anything, but since I had never heard them before the show, was like going in kind of clean slate, and it's definitely made me want to like listen to them afterwards and check them out on Spotify and dig more into their discography. So yeah, I definitely came out pretty stoked on them.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, like I said, the last time I had seen them was like 2010 Thrash and Burn at a roller rink. And I mean, it wasn't as cohesive because they were still sort of early on kind of figuring stuff out. What I heard at Craft House, I was literally like, if someone would have played that for me, I probably would have guessed that it was August Burns Red or something like that.
Yeah, like a unknown track or like a new song or something that we weren't familiar with.
Yeah, from the instrumentals to the vocals, just all of it was very reminiscent of August Burns Red. So
yeah, I'm sure we've got people who listen who are fans of August Burns Red and, you know, and not from the Pittsburgh area, so they may not have heard of them. So, you know, yeah. Anyone who's listening, if you're into that, check them out.
Absolutely. So that'll bring us to the next band, which was Bloodlet. So I'm going to just be upfront and honest right from the jump here.
Pulling off
Bloodlet. Bloodlet wasn't a band that I had ever really listened to or heard of. I was mainly coming to the show for Darkest Hour because they were playing Deliver Us in its entirety. So I went into this with I didn't pre-listen to anything. I was just listening to Deliver Us on repeat leading up to the show. And I've honestly not listened to them since. That's not a knock on Bloodlet. I thought that, you know, they played well. The music was awesome. I just personally don't know a whole lot about their background or their music. I know that they came up in the 90s, kind of towards the end of the 90s with that like hardcore movement. I don't necessarily know if they're considered a hardcore band. Like what would you consider them?
I would say that they definitely are like, they sound like a hardcore band. There's like a little bit of that like sludge doom metal sound there. Like there were some parts or like the songs kind of had some like early Mastodon style riffs and stuff like that. But I was weird to find that like they're like on their Wikipedia, they're classified as a metalcore band, which I was kind of surprised to see that. I would definitely put them more in like the hardcore camp if I were the one making the call, but also similar to you, like I had listened to a couple tracks of them just to like kind of feel them out and get an idea of what type of music they were. And the two songs that I listened to sounded very like hardcore to me, and maybe they have some more metalcore tracks. But I kind of had the same feel that like they had a lot of energy and like it was fun watching them play, and like the instrumentation was good. I think the mix seemed a little off for them. Like the vocals were really drowned out, and I don't know if that was a choice by them. I mean, I know, like you said, since they came up in the 90s and they haven't put out an album recently, so their like recordings are older. You know, I don't know if that's kind of like the sound that they're just going to keep with, or if, you know, they wanted to make the vocals kind of sludgy and hardcore-y on purpose or what. But I would have liked to hear more of the vocals and it not be quite drowned out as much by the instruments.
Yeah, I did get that as well, just with the mix and whether or not that was you know, intentional, or if that was just, you know, something got screwed up between the guy running the audio and or you know, where the fallout was there. But overall, I mean, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't bad enough that you were like, you know, this is unbearable or anything like that. And they still put on, they were entertaining to watch as well. And, you know, the crowd I felt like was into it too. So, so there's that for sure. But yeah, looking at Spotify, it doesn't look like they've released a record and since 2002. And I don't know if that's just those, any record that they've made since 2002 just isn't on Spotify. And I guess like a quick Google search would probably answer that question for me. I don't know if I'm going to do that right now, but yeah, so that's kind of curious. And I see that they've released, what is it, maybe three singles since 2019. So it looks like they're working on a new record. So maybe this is just kind of them dipping their toes back in to both writing music and performing. If that's the case, I think that they did a great job. Even if it's not the case, like I said, it wasn't, you know, a bad performance by any means or anything like that. I went into this show not knowing who they were, and maybe that's my fault. And you know, just sort of not knowing what to expect. So that was my first Bloodlet experience, was seeing them live. And I, like I said, I liked it. I'm definitely going to, if they drop this full album in 2022, it's definitely on my radar to check out. So, I think that is going to be the case. If not, definitely check out their three newest singles. One's called Stealing Fire, one's called Viper in Hand, and the other one is called Choking on the Peat. Definitely give those a listen and keep an eye out for a full record. It seems like that's what they're kind of building up to.
Yeah, I mean, three singles. It seems like they're like
probably close.
Yeah. And, you know, like we said before, neither of us have really listened to them a ton, and like I don't follow them on social media to see if they've posted that or have already announced a release date for the album, but just based on the fact that they have three singles, that's like a third of an album, so they got to be like on the horizon, I would guess.
Yeah, they only have 3,565 monthly listeners on Spotify. That is low.
Huh.
So I'm thinking maybe these guys just didn't have a Spotify presence, because it seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like a lot of people knew who they were at the show.
Yeah.
But regardless, definitely check them out. Check out their three newest singles that they've dropped since 2019, one of which they dropped not that long ago in 2022. And then keep an eye out for a full record. It seems like that's what they're building up to. So yeah, after Bloodlet's set, we actually, I don't know if we want to talk about this part now or not, but I'm just going to do it anyways. So I figured talk in order of like what we experienced, you know. So we subscribed to Darkest Hour's Patreon, and doing that, we actually got VIP passes to go and like hang out with the band and do like a Q&A and stuff and a meet and greet and all that stuff. So that was kind of a cool experience.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I probably could have saved that till the Darkest Hour part, but I'm doing like order of experience here. So
yeah, it makes sense.
Between Bloodlet and Zayo, we got to go back and hang out with Darkest Hour and chat with them a little bit. They follow the podcast, so thank you guys. If you're listening to this, we appreciate you. Yeah, honestly, those guys, for being kind of like heroes to me in a way for writing a record that to me is top 10 of all time. They were just real down to earth guys. It was real cool. Talked to them about records and what they were listening to. And strangely enough, I don't know how strange it is, it seems like kind of a theme these days. Big into hip hop right now, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. I was surprised by that. And what was the song? They were playing something on the, like, we went out to like the tent thing that they had, and they were like jamming to, was it like Wham or something?
I honestly I forget don't who even it was. Remember. But yeah, it was it's a very eclectic group of guys. They're all you know, really cool, really down to earth, really personable. You know, everybody shook our hand. Everybody was, you know, seemingly genuinely interested in our existence, where, you know, you go to some of those meet and greets, and they kind of want to rush you through as fast as possible. It's like, all right, single file, all right, your turn, hurry up. You know, they have like not a security, but maybe like a band manager or somebody there sort of like ushering you through, like kind of like cattle into a,
yeah, like herding into you along
a field, or so, yeah, just kind of just like making sure you're doing what they want you to do in and out as quickly as possible, where this was kind of like, you know, it was only supposed to be 15 minutes or something like that, but we ended up being out there until they heard that the other band, like the next band was coming up, and they're like, oh shit, we should probably let you guys go.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a cool interaction. One of the cooler VIP experiences that I've had, at any show. You know, I've done them with Coheed and Cambria. There's my Coheed drop, Contortionist, Between the Buried and Me, Polyphia. I don't remember what else, but those are the four off the top of my head. And every single one of those, minus maybe the Contortionist ones, because I feel like those guys are pretty personable too. But this one had more of like a, you know, backstage hangout feel than it did like a, you paid for a service and you get your service and that's all you get and now you leave kind of thing. So I felt like it was a really cool way to do what they did. And, you know, we got signed posters. They signed my copy of Deliver Us on vinyl, which was really cool. And yeah, I mean, we talked to them about this, about the podcast and stuff, and, you know,
yeah, yeah, that was really cool. Us,
which, yeah, it was just all really cool experience overall. And yeah, I figured that, so that happened between Bloodlet and Zao. And
I actually just thought about that. I didn't think about this before, but that was actually my first time doing a VIP experience for a concert. So like, it was cool. Like, you know, that I know, like you said, sometimes it's like being herded and stuff. And
right,
it's cool that my first experience was like, yeah, we basically just like chilled with them for, I don't know how long it was actually, because it was kind of just like, we went out, we were just like chit chatting, and then it was like, oh shit, time to go back in. So
right,
it kind of like flew by. So it could have been 5 minutes. It could have been 25. I don't really know, but
right. Yeah, and you'll get to experience a little bit of what it feels like to be herded during a VIP experience whenever we do it for Coheed here in a couple weeks.
Yeah,
and that's not a knock on those guys. Honestly, it might be because of how, like, where they did it. Not where, like, location wise, but like where in the day that they did it. It was between two bands' sets, where Coheed, being a bigger band with like a bigger production, which you've never seen them live, so you'll get to experience that too. They do it before the show, before doors open. So there is kind of like a urgency, I suppose, to like get through that before they open the floodgates and everyone comes in, because there's a lot more that those guys are doing to sort of prepare before the show.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably why that happens the way it happens, but they still are very, like, I feel like they're still personable in the limited amount of time you get with them. You kind of get ushered in, you go down the line of each of the members, and then you go back in line, and then you come back and take a photo, and then like, so it's a different experience, so you'll get to see that. But I like the way that Darkest Hour did it for their Patreon subscribers during this tour. So that, it was very cool. I would be, honestly, I'd be interested to see if any other bands sort of adapt that model, or, you know, if Darkest Hour continues to do stuff like that at shows. It was kind of neat.
Yeah, but it was definitely cool.
So, yeah. So after that, we rushed back in because Zao had started, and that's the next band. Local band, I'm pretty sure they came up in the Pittsburgh scene.
Yeah, they were initially from West Virginia, but they, I guess, relocated to Greensburg, which, for those not familiar, it's kind of like basically extension of Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And more or less. I think probably even like coming up in West Virginia or whatever, there's likely, I mean, having been in West Virginia, there's not a whole lot, you know, outside of like Morgantown and like Berkeley and...
Yeah, they probably were getting most of their, like most of the scene was coming from, like, the Pittsburgh area.
They were probably coming up and playing venues like Alter Bar and the Rex, you know, venues that don't exist anymore, but pretty big back then. Diesel,
Oh, yeah. Club Diesel.
Club Zoo. Do you ever go to that venue?
No, Parkway, I didn't. I've been Parkway to, Center I went to Mall. Diesel once.
Yeah, but regardless, yeah. So there, I know that, you know, I've know of Zayo, but full disclosure, again, they weren't really a band that I listened to much, which maybe that's blasphemy from being from Pittsburgh and them sort of coming up in this area. But yeah, I hadn't really listened to them all that much leading up to this show. But I have listened to them since. I did like their set. I thought that they were performers. At least that's what I hope. Because if that wasn't a performance, everybody was just like on some kind of crazy, like,
bath salts.
Literally, like the guitarist, his eyes were rolled to the back of his head for like 80% of their set.
Yeah, and when it wasn't that, he was like throwing his guitar around and like,
yeah, yep.
He was like, and the one point he got on his hands and knees and he like, it looked like he was raising the guitar up to like sacrifice it and stuff. I mean, they were definitely like an animated group and their stage presence was really good. But yeah, I was like, I don't know whether to be concerned by like what is about to happen to these dudes or if this is all just like, you know, getting into the music and, you know, creating a stage presence kind of thing. Yeah. But it was fun though.
If we were witnessing like someone being possessed or,
yeah,
you know, if it was drug related or if it was just all an act. And honestly, it had to have been all an act because we went over to the merch table after that. And the guitarist, the one whose eyes were rolling into the back of his head and shit, was at the merch table, like complete, like one of the most normal dudes I've ever.
Yeah, he was just like chilling. Didn't he was just like had a glass of wine. I think
I was gonna say sipping like a glass of wine, sitting there just talking like to everybody that came up. Which is, you know, I love bands that do that go to the merch table, talk to their fans, sign stuff for their fans, whatever. Like, it's,
yeah, that's really cool.
You don't get that at bigger shows, just because it would be, you know, a train wreck. But at a smaller show, at a smaller venue like this, it's always cool to see bands that do that. And that was one thing that I really appreciated. Especially with this being kind of their like local show, I do think that the crowd went very hard for them.
Yeah,
probably because of that. I'm sure they had a lot of friends and family there. But you know, a lot of people in this area know who they were, grew up listening to them, whatever it may be. And I think Pittsburgh showed out for them for sure.
Yeah, it's funny because like I didn't actually know they were from this area. I listened to them in high school a pretty good bit because their singer, he kind of has that like crazy vocal that I would say is kind of like early M. Yore, where it's like not human sounding. It's like he sounds like he's like some like reptile monster kind of like, and it's so cool. Like it's one of the most unique vocals in metal, I think. And so I just like, I really dug them when I first heard them. And the Rising End, the first Prophecy, was like the song that I always jammed by them. And thankfully they played it at the show. So I was pretty hyped about that. But I admittedly haven't listened to them much since then. But I do occasionally listen to the Bad Christian podcast, and I know they've been on there. Like they seem like they're pals with the guys on the Bad Christian podcast. So, I've like heard interviews by them and it was like, oh yeah, I've kind of forgot about Zayo. And I would like go back and listen to them and stuff. So like seeing them perform live was really cool. And like, it got me putting them back into the rotation. And I mean, they just last year came out with the Crimson Corridor was their newest album, and there's some jams on there too. I like Ship of Theseus and Croatone are pretty awesome songs, and they put those on their set list as well. So it was a pretty awesome set list, and they had a great stage presence, so I really enjoyed them.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely check out the Crimson Corridor if you've not listened to them before. Or just shuffle their discography, see what you find. But they definitely deserve the the hype that sort of were put around them for this show, at least in this area. I know some people were even saying like Darkest Hour should have given them some of their set time. Well, Darkest Hour couldn't have done that because their set time was set because it's an entire album.
Yeah.
Can't skip any songs there. But you know, I did understand where they were coming from. And, you know, with how many people seemed to be there for them. Yeah, just overall the energy in the place whenever they played was fantastic. And yeah, I definitely am going to keep an eye out for them coming back and might check them out again. But yeah, if you've not heard of them, check them out. And moving on to the, you know, sort of the meat and potatoes, in my opinion, of this episode.
Yeah.
Darkest Hour headlining, playing Deliver Us in its entirety. It lived up to my expectations. I loved every second of it. We actually got to be on the rail for it, which was kind of cool. After Zayo was done playing, a lot of the like front area like cleared out to go get drinks or whatever they wanted to do, and we just swooped right in. And I mean, they left like a quarter section of that rail wide open, so it was hard not to make a move there. But
gotta be on the rail.
It was awesome. I mean, just hearing Doomsayer just start, you know, it just brought me back to the first time I saw them, because that's what they opened with that day too. And it was just coming full circle for me.
Just what a way to open a show too. Like, it just right out of the gates, they're just diving in. And
I know, and that's probably their most popular song. Demons might be, but
Doomsayer. It's probably those two. Like, yeah. I don't know which one, based on the stats.
Like, there's two of your first three songs right there, right? But
yeah,
but yeah, honestly, I wasn't sure how often they've been playing some of the songs on this record. I have not seen them live since my first ever show. I've not seen them live since. So this was only my second time ever seeing them. The first time I saw them, they just released Deliver Us. So so I was curious to see, you know, I don't know how often they play songs like Tunguska or Fire in the Skies or Paradox with Flies. I was curious to see how sharp they would be, because some of those songs are pretty technical. I mean, not that other music that they've released since hasn't been technical at all, but I feel like this, in my opinion, is their best record. So I was curious to see, you know, how well they would still be able to perform these tracks live. And I thought they were pretty much spot on. I mean, their drummer used to drum for Periphery, so I'm sure he's got all of the prog craziness in his repertoire from a drummer's perspective. So I'm sure he was able to easily knock these out, and he did.
He's a beast of a drummer too.
Oh yeah. And I think the only original members, I think, were obviously the singer John, the bass player Aaron, which they call him the big deal, and then are both guitarists? I don't think both guitarists are original. I think the lead guitarist, who you would consider the lead guitarist.
I honestly didn't know who to consider lead. That's because true, they both like shred.
Because Mike is, he does shred, and he's, I know he's an original member, Mike. I'm pretty confident the other guy came over from like the Faceless or something. Regardless, the Faceless, a very technical band. So, I was interested to see how they would pull it off, and I felt like they crushed it. I mean, everybody was spot on. Mike playing some of those solos was really, he was like right in our face too, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And Aaron kept coming over, the bass player, and I mean, he even sort of interacted, because I was filming some stuff too, just because I was like, I need to get some video of this to remember that this happened. Especially if I like black out from how excited I am to see it. Yeah, the other guitarist, Nico Santora, he's very new, actually. So the guitarist, I think, was Chris Norris, maybe, whenever they released this record. Or it was either him or the other Mike. I forget his last name. But Nico Santora, I'm pretty sure he came over from, like, the Faceless or something. I could probably Google that, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, it's...
But, yeah, honestly, these guys didn't miss a beat. I'm sure they play Demons and Doomsayer a lot, so I figured that those would be the most polished tracks that they play. But my favorite tracks on this record are like Tunguska, Fire in the Skies, and Paradox with Flies, and they crushed all three of them.
Yeah.
They were very entertaining. Just like everything about that show was awesome. I keep cutting you off and I'm sorry. So go ahead.
No, that's all right. I was just going to say that they're, the set list, I mean, obviously it was the album, but just every track they killed it with. And it was fun watching them play too. Like they were getting into it and just watching him shred. And I think you said that he has the Flying V, was like his new signature model.
I don't know how new it is. I know that he's an ESP artist.
Okay.
So like he has his own signature ESP guitar that is kind of, it looks like a V.
Yeah.
A Flying V or whatever that those guitars are called, like the Gibson model.
It kind of had the more like jagged V. It was almost like, yeah, sort of like the Gibson V, but kind of like somewhere in between that and like a BC Rich kind of like jagged, like, I don't know what they call them, but they have those like ones that look like you'll poke your eye out with them.
Right.
But yep. Yeah. And it was just watching him like do the like dive bombs with the,
oh yeah, with
the whammy. I was just like, it was making me nervous that I was like, dude, it's going to snap. It's going to break. Just like either you're going to break your strings or your tremolo is just going to come right off. And it hung in there for dear life, but he definitely tested the boundaries for sure. It was fun watching though.
Oh yeah. They were super entertaining, very engaging with the crowd, which was cool. You know, and we got to experience a lot of that being as close as we were, fist bumps and whatever, and standing up on the, you know, standing up close to the, you know, up on the speakers and shit, and getting real, you know, hovering the guitar over the crowd and everything you expect at sort of a rock show or a metal show, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it was an out of body experience for part of it, for sure, for me. definitely brought me back, and I kind of wish every Darkest Hour show was them playing Deliver Us in its entirety. I guess that's not fair, because I mean, I do like other Darkest Hour stuff, but that record for me is just real special. So a huge thank you to those guys for bringing that to a place that we could drive. I would have driven further if I needed to be honest. But bringing that to our city and just touring that record, you know, thank you for doing that. To the guys in Darkest Hour. And
yeah, it was an awesome show. Like the one song that I was like, cause I know that they, like, after they did the album in its entirety, they played, was it two or three other songs?
I think it was just two.
Two.
They played, what did they play?
With a Thousand Words to Say, but one.
Yeah.
I think was one
Yep.
And I love that track, but I was kind of hoping they'd play Convalescence, because that's like the song by them that like I initially heard that got me into listening to them. And then obviously, you know, Deliver Us came out and it was just like, all right, every one of these tracks is good. But Convalescence was like the first one that I heard. And that was, back in the day before like streaming services and stuff. It was like, I got a gift card for Apple Music and... like, you know, that was the track, one of the tracks I bought, because it was like, ooh, this sample is dirty. Got to download it. And
It was three songs. They played Tranquil too, and the Sadist Nation. I forgot that they played Tranquil. Regardless, strangely, I mean, your Convalescence was the first song that you had heard from them.
Yeah.
Or yeah. So Deliver Us was the first record that I, that was my first experience. My, I used to go to like a campground and stuff with my family growing up, and we had like friends and stuff that would go up there too. And one of my friends, Brandon Greening, actually got that CD. His dad was like big into metal and stuff. So like they kind of grew up listening to metal, where my dad was more into like classic rock stuff that we would consider classic rock now. So I didn't get a lot of exposure to like the heavier stuff. So they had actually bought a couple CDs at like FYE or some shit right before coming up there. And that was one of them. So my first Darkest Hour experience was actually listening to Deliver Us in its entirety.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's just a full circle for me. That was my first exposure to them. My first ever metal show was them touring in support of that. Actually, I went with, my friend Brandon that I was just talking about, and I'm pretty sure you were there and a couple of our other friends were probably there. Who knows?
Yeah. But, I definitely did go to that show. Cause I remember, when Unearth came on, the guitarist like put his foot out into the crowd and like basically like, if I didn't put my hand up, he would have stepped on my head. So like, I remember that part. And I remember like at the time, Suicide Silence was one of the bands that I was just like, hadn't really gotten into, but I was like so excited about the other ones. And then seeing Suicide Silence there was like, all right, they're cool. I like them now. And
stuff. So Mitch.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really cool to sort of have that just come full circle. That's one of the big reasons why this was just like crazy, you know, that I actually got that this actually happened is awesome. And
I definitely got that feeling of nostalgia whenever, like, because they had the lights, you know, the light show going on with it, and yeah. I remember the like flood of like bright white lights coming into the crowd when they were playing, and like they had a similar light show, and it just like flooded me with that nostalgia of like seeing them play it with, you know, August Burns Red and Suicide Silence and stuff. So even though it wasn't the first album I heard by them, it was the one that I got into by them the most. So it was like watching them play was fun. And then getting that huge nostalgia hit was also just like, ah, it takes me back to a better, simpler times.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly. And then we both caught picks in the crowd, which was kind of cool. So
a little
souvenir to remember it by. And yeah, just everything about this show, everything about, you know, in particular Darkest Hour's set and just Darkest Hour in general was everything I was hoping it would be. I honestly feel like my anticipation for that set and just my excitement to meet the guys and all of that stuff kind of overshadowed some of the opening bands. So I do feel a little bit bad that I was kind of in my own head getting myself pumped up for hearing this epic record in totality.
That just speaks also to how well Darkest Hour performed. Cause if you set the bar so high in your head going into it and they still, you know, lived up to it, it's like kudos to them for,
it was definitely, it lived up to my expectations for sure. And, yeah, it's going to be a favorite of mine for a while, just, you know, not even just because of how well they did, but the nostalgia and all that stuff. I mean, that was a cool experience. I do feel like I'm just saying the same thing in a slightly different way over and over again. So if you didn't comprehend, this was an important record for me, and I really enjoyed seeing it live.
Listen to it.
Yeah, if you've not, I mean, you're probably not listening to this episode if you've never heard Darkest Hour or listened to Deliver Us. But if you're somehow stumbled upon this somewhere in Spotify land or Apple Podcast land or whatever, and you have not listened to Deliver Us by Darkest Hour, that record, and you like metal and stuff like that, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah, definitely go and check it out for sure. Like, I feel like there's any person who's into, like, I would say anywhere from like hard rock to basically any genre of metal, I feel like you can find something to love about not just this album, but just Darkest Hour in general.
Yeah. Cause John's vocals, honestly, it's one of those metal vocals where even though he's, you know, doing a harsh vocal, a scream, a growl, whatever you want to call it. Again, I still have no idea what is the proper term for that. You can understand, like, it's a lot of people complain about metal. It's like, oh, I can't even understand what he's saying. I feel like John's vocal, you can really kind of pick up like what he's saying without having to go look at a lyric book. For the most part, like, that's something that I've always felt about Darkest Hour. And now I feel that way about bands like Silent Planet and, you know, like different vocals where, you know, you get that sort of like harsh, you know, angsty, whatever, but then it's like, but you can understand it without going to a lyric book and, or just like, you know, like what some people like to do, which is just scream in the same cadence, you know, just brah, like you're not even like actually saying any words. Like you just understand like the cadence of the vocal as opposed to like the lyrics. I think that, you know, this is a band that's a little bit more accessible, especially this record, or parts of this record, not all of it's accessible. But it's a little bit more accessible than another, you know, typical like metalcore band. Are they metalcore? Would you consider, I guess so.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, there's not I always associate metalcore with having like a decent split between harsh and clean vocals.
Yeah, I mean,
but like, I guess it's not really. I mean, August Burns Red is metalcore, and they don't really have.
Yeah, that's that was I was just going to use.
Yeah, so I guess that's kind of not accurate. I just always think of like whenever I was starting to listen to heavier music, you know, one of the big bands for me was like Killswitch Engage, which that was always classified as metalcore, and
yeah, you know, definitely one of the bigger metalcores.
So that's why I feel like I always used to associate that, you know, that split with.
I think that's a very common thing. I would say probably the majority of bands do have like a mix of clean and harsh vocals. And that's why like some of the like more quote unquote heavy, I guess, genres, like fans of those genres sometimes like, that's like their pain point with metalcore is like, oh, I don't like the singing and stuff. And I mean, I generally am like a person who likes kind of all singing or all heavy, like harsh vocals, but there are definitely bands that do both well. And like Silent Planet's one that I like their mix and stuff. So there's definitely exceptions to that rule for me, but I do like Darkest Hour's vocal. Yeah. Periphery too.
Just saying, that's like one of your favorite bands and they literally defy your, like, your rule.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like Spirit Box too is up there on my list. And she does a lot of clean vocals and heavy, but I'd say like for the most part, you know, it's like the Meshuggahs and, you know, when you go in that route and then you kind of go to the softer side with like Delta Sleep and things.
Yeah, for sure. But
I just went on a tangent there, sorry.
No, it's all right. So yeah, overall, I mean, this show in general, in totality, was a really cool experience. The venue was a new experience for us, and that was cool. It was cool to see Arcane Haven again for me for the first time for you, and seeing kind of how far they've come. It was cool to have a first experience with Bloodlet and Zao. And, you know, both of those bands put on great shows, and I'm following them on Spotify now, looking forward to anything new that drops from those guys. Zao just released a record last year, and it seems like Bloodlet is about to drop a new record soon. That's at least what it looks like, so definitely going to keep an eye out for that. And then, obviously, Darkest Hour put on a phenomenal show, playing one of the best, I guess we'll call it, metalcore records in its entirety from front to back. So just overall, and the VIP thing was really cool. The merch was sick. I mean, I now have two shirts with Deliver Us artwork on it. Really pumped about that. Shout out to the dude from Baroness that designed that. Shout out to Devin Townsend for producing this masterpiece of a record, because that's another cool thing. And we got to have something prog to talk about, right? So Baroness and Devin Townsend. This record's got some prog flavor, whether it's just the artwork and the mastering, you know, or the producing or whatever. Still really cool. And I hope that they get to do this for the folks in Europe that are about to have them over there. Hopefully they get the same experience, because this was awesome.
It's going to be sick.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. Obviously I think this went a little longer than I thought it would, but we go on tangents. It happens. And I was struggling to remember names for a second for some reason.
Went down a Google rabbit hole.
Yeah. Nico Santora is the other guitarist, by the way. I did Google it while we were semi-talking, and he was a former guitarist of the Faceless, but he also played in Suicidal Tendencies.
Oh.
And Fallujah.
Oh, damn.
So pretty awesome resume right there.
Yeah.
I no more rabbit holes, because I do want to talk about Fallujah on this show at some point, especially with their lineup changes and their new record that's dropping, but we'll save that for another day. So
yeah.
Thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate it. We both really appreciate it. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah. Thanks.